When it comes to nutrition, it's not just about what you eat or supplement with, but what you actually absorb. That's why you want to choose high-quality forms of nutrients in supplement form and consider digestive enzymes. Have you ever used a digestive enzyme? Digestive enzymes support the proper digestion and absorption of proteins, carbs, and fats. I love my enzymes from Needed, and I can truly feel a difference if I forgot to take them. Like prenatal vitamins, not all digestive enzymes are created equally. Needed's 14 clinically backed digestive enzymes support the optimal digestions of, like I said, protein, carbs, and fats, as well as sensitive foods like dairy, gluten, and legumes throughout the entire pH spectrum of your digestive tract. And these are safe to take during pregnancy and nursing. You can get 20% off your own digestive enzymes with code VBAC at checkout. Visit thisisneeded.com and don't forget to type in VBAC, V-B-A-C, for 20% off. Hello, women of strength. We have a VBAC story coming your way today from our friend Shannon. Hello, Shannon.
Hello.
Thank you for being here with us.
Of course.
Shannon is from Texas, and did you have your VBAC in Texas or
Fort Worth, Texas?
Awesome. So if you're in Texas, listen up for sure. But really, just in general, listen up no matter what. But I sometimes feel like when we can connect people within the area, it's really helpful. Shannon's got two crazy stories. Not crazy. Sometimes crazy sounds bad, but a lot. Jam-packed stories. How about that? She's got some jam-packed stories for us today, but I do have a review of the week, so I'm going to get into that, and then we will turn the time over to her. This reviewer is Bethany, and it's about our course, actually, our VBAC course. It says, amazing course. So much great fact-based information and taught so lovingly by Megan and Julie. I'm so thankful that I chose this course, and I'm excited about being able to implement what I've learned into my work as a doula. So she is one of our doulas. If you guys didn't know this already, we have a VBAC doula directory, and it's amazing. These people are all over the world supporting VBAC parents in ways that we can't support them because I'm just here in Utah by myself, right? I can't travel the world. So they have come, they have become certified and are serving so many parents out there. So you can find them at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. And then, yeah, if you're wanting to learn more about VBAC and upping your VBAC game, you can go to thevbaclink.com and check out our courses for both parents and doulas. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, Shannon, thank you again for being here.
Of course, I'm very excited.
I am very excited that you were going to share, and I'd just like to turn the time over to you.
Awesome. So I listened to like all of the VBAC Link podcasts when I was like pregnant with my daughter and trying to prepare and learn everything I possibly could. So I'm excited to get to do this. So my first baby, I never wanted kids ever. I was very firm, told my mom, like, you're never getting grandkids. Hope you're prepared for that. And I got pregnant with an IUD in the right place.
What?
Yes. So I had my IUD for 4 years and it was in the right place. I didn't know what was going on with me. I just felt weird. And my best friend at the time was like, listen, I know you think it's crazy, but you need to go take a pregnancy test. And I did, and it was positive. And then I was like, it's because it's expired. It's just an expired test. It's a false positive. It's not real. And I got more tests. Yeah, I got more tests on the way to work. Then read, you know, the instructions, because like, I know, didn't want kids, didn't ever have to take a pregnancy test before. Read the instructions, was like, oh, you're supposed to do this first thing in the morning. So I worked my entire shift, not like, just terrified. Took them the next morning. And again, 3 positives again. So I called literally, and I didn't have like OB care set up at that time. Like I was pretty young in between doctors. I was 25 when I got pregnant, which in my mind is pretty young, especially I've never wanted kids. So I called like basically any OB in my area and was like, I need you to see me today, right now. This is terrifying. When I got my IUD, the doctor told me, like, you're not going to get pregnant. If you do, it's probably going to be ectopic and it's going to be bad. So I was freaking out. So finally, I got a doctor that could get me in the next day, which they were not very good. But I saw them. They did an ultrasound, and the ultrasound tech actually told me, like, yep, there's your IUD. Look, and she's right here outside of it. Nothing. You're just the one we can't do anything about. So she also told me that I was lucky it was only one, which really freaked me out. So then I go into the exam room and I'm like bawling because, I didn't want kids. I was very overwhelmed.
A lot is happening in your mind and body right now.
So the OB walks in and she's like, why are you crying? Like, what's wrong with you? And immediately was just like very
Oh
aggressive.
my gosh.
So she told me we're taking my IUD out and that I'd probably miscarry and, it'd be fine. And I was like, okay.
Oh my goodness, right now. I'm like getting a lot of feelings inside of me, like for you. Like, I'm sorry, but ew, I don't like this.
Oh no. So I did not like her. She really gave me a bad taste in my mouth just that one visit. So I asked to be switched to a doctor in the same practice, or another doctor in the same practice that actually, ironically, my mom's like sees. I didn't know that that was her OB, but just ended up going to her. And she was pretty good throughout the whole pregnancy. She was more like kind of natural minded, not anything like natural minded like I know now, because I didn't know then. So I have Ehlers-Danlos as well. So they sent me off to
What is
go.
that?
It's hypermobility. It's like all your joints are super stretchy, they dislocate, stuff like that. And there's a couple different kinds. There's just hypermobility, which is what I have, and then there's also vascular, which is way more dangerous because it can cause arteries to rupture, right? So they wanted
Whoa.
to make sure that I didn't have the vascular type, which I already kind of knew I didn't have that. So they've sent me off just to make sure because, if I did have vascular, then it would be like super high risk testing, or I mean super high risk pregnancy and just straight basically to a C-section. So I was labeled high risk even though I didn't have the vascular type, but I was labeled high risk because of the IUD as well. So I was seeing both doctors every single, all the way through every month and then every 2 weeks, every week, I was getting an ultrasound at every single appointment. And of course, the big baby thing came up like really fast, almost immediately. So they told me, she's a big baby, she's measuring ahead. And I buried my head in the sand. Like I didn't want any kids, so I didn't look into birth or pregnancy or even what like a newborn baby was like. I was just kind of like, it's going to be hard. We'll figure it out. We'll do it. So my high risk doctor suggested inducing early, right around like once we got to like 38 weeks, she was measuring like greater than 99th percentile for everything. They had at 38 weeks, they had her estimated size at 50, or 10 pounds and 15 ounces,
At
and
30 what weeks?
38 weeks.
Okay.
And I also, I mean, I was like eating my feelings. So I did gain a lot of weight, but I just deep down in my gut was like, there's no way she's that big. Like, there's no way. And I think I gained about 60 to 70 pounds with that pregnancy. And so even in my mind, thinking like she alone, like even her being like a fifth of the weight, that just seems too high to me for what I had gained. So they told me that, they wouldn't even let me try for a vaginal if she was measuring over 11 pounds at 39 weeks when they redid it. So, and I didn't know that I could say no to like literally anything, right? I had no idea. So they were like, okay. And my high risk doctor actually told my OB, like, we need to induce at 39 weeks if we want to give her a chance at having a vaginal birth. And my OB said no. So I was kind of upset about that because I didn't want to have a C-section. I didn't know anything about birth, but I knew I didn't want to have a C-section because I have had many surgeries for Ehlers-Danlos. And I've had a really hard time recovering from all of them. So that was fun. But so she didn't want me to go past my due date because of all of that. So she set my induction date for my due date. And at 5 o'clock in the morning on my due date, I had my water broke without any contractions, like, and I was told rush to the hospital, like it was an emergency. They gave me two doses of Cytotec and in 8 hours. So I
So
got there at 5 a.m.
they induced your labor.
They started the induction process, right? Because I was supposed to be induced at 7 p.m. that night was when I was supposed to show up. And so I basically just moved it up by 12 hours. So we got there about 5 a.m. And they started Cytotec and they did two doses in 8 hours.
Yeah,
And
normal.
yeah. Well, I
For
was
every
told
4 hours.
originally they were going to do that, it was going to take 12 hours, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I was like, that's not very long.
Yeah,
And then
yeah.
they started high dose PIT like really fast. I mean, and I was told I couldn't get out of the bed or move because I was attached to the IVs and the monitors and whatever. And again, didn't know better. So by, I mean, really fast, I was begging for an epidural. I was 2 centimeters dilated. I was begging. I was dying. Like, couldn't
Well, you
move,
were hit
writhing
with a
in
freight
pain.
train.
Yeah. And I hadn't done any prep, like pain management strategies or anything like that. So I didn't know how to handle the pain. I was just in it.
Yeah.
So I begged for an epidural. And my doctor was monitoring everything remotely, like on her phone, I guess, and telling them what to do. So she didn't show up. I had been at the hospital for, I think, 12 hours before she showed up. And she showed up, she sat at the end of my bed, and she showed up about an hour after I had gotten my epidural. And she just sat there and said, you know, the baby's in distress, we need to do a C-section. You know, you're not progressing, we need to do a C-section. So I, you know, hearing that, I'm terrified.
Yeah.
Like, and but it took 45 minutes then to get to the OR. Yeah. So we get to the OR and, you know, they're like scrubbing and my husband's waiting out there for them to get everything ready. And she's talking to her like assist.
Yeah.
And he was asking her, like, you know, what's going on? You know, normal talk because it's their everyday job. But, you know, for us, it's not that.
Right.
And he overheard her say that she was off call at 8:30 and was going to be out of town for 3 days. And so she just wanted to get this done and get out. And he was smart and didn't tell me that for like 2 weeks. Because I mean, the C-section itself was very like traumatic for me because no one was talking to me. I think I know now that what I was experiencing was low blood pressure, but I couldn't talk. Like I could hear my thoughts, but I could not form them into words. You know, I was just like freaking out, and I was too drugged to even hold her after she was born. All of that, like, there's pictures of me in recovery, and I'm just not there. So he told me that, yeah. But she was off call at 8:30. My daughter was born at 8 p.m. And when I requested all of my like documents,
Op
surgery,
reports.
yeah, it said that my reason for C-section was failure to progress. And I was given,
I thought your baby was in distress.
yep. And it was also written as elective C-section. And I
Yes.
was given, so we got there at 5 a.m. My daughter was born at 8 o'clock. So what is that, 13 hours? So like no time at all. And also, when my daughter came out, she was born 9 pounds, 5 ounces. And I was told, there's no way she's too big. She would never, ever fit.
She was a perfect size.
And almost 2 pounds less than
What
the
they said.
ultrasound said it would be.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. And so, and then she was a very difficult, like, newborn. Like, we joked that she came out crying and didn't stop for 9 months. I mean, everything went wrong. Tongue ties, lip ties. She had torticollis. She had CMPA. And she was had a formula intolerance. I had low milk supply, so we ended up with a breast milk donor who was free of all of her allergens. I mean, everything. So I had a lot of PTSD, not just from birth, but also from like the newborn stage. So it took
Yeah.
us a long time to decide that we were going to have another baby. So my daughters are almost exactly 6 years apart. And basically, as soon as we decided that we were going to have another baby, I knew I did not want to have another C-section. That was all I could think about. So I started, you know, digging to find resources and what I could do. I didn't even know what it was called. So we ended up finding, well, I ended up finding the VBAC Link Facebook group. And then
Yeah.
through that, the podcast, and I was just like digging. And we decided probably about 6 months before I removed my IUD, because I did get the same IUD that I got pregnant with, just because it's non-hormonal and I can't handle hormones. So I said, you know, if we end up with another baby, we end up with another baby, and it's fine.
Taking a quick break to share more about digestive enzymes. For years, I have had digestive issues. I was told to take a digestive enzyme, and so I went on Amazon, checked out a few products with honestly great reviews, and quickly bought one. I figured they couldn't all be different, right? Well, similar to other supplements like prenatal vitamins, I have learned after starting Needed's digestive enzymes that they are not all alike. My belly has had issues for years, so I decided to get into the doctor and get down to the bottom of things. The doctor asked me to bring all my supplements in, and she wanted to review everything and told me to throw out some things. But when it came to anything that I brought from needed supplements, she said, hold on to these and keep up with them. She was so direct. I said, okay. So I threw out the old digestive enzymes and continued taking needed. You guys, I really wish I could explain the difference I have experienced in taking these digestive enzymes versus the others. It's truly so cool to see. The bloat, digestive noise, my gas, yes, I'm talking about gas, has truly improved. I can't thank Needed enough for creating such a high quality digestive enzyme that helps me get radically better digestion. No matter what state of life you are in, you can likely benefit from taking digestive enzymes. Grab your bottle today and get 20% off with code VBAC. Visit thisisneeded.com and get 20% off with code VBAC. Okay, let's get back into today's show.
So we ended up, you know, for 6 months before that, trying to figure out what we were going to do. And because I had so much trouble breastfeeding, and our pediatrician actually was like, you know, formula intolerance runs in families. So if your first one had it, you probably just should avoid formula if at all possible with your second. So I was already trying to like find milk donors and get all of that lined up. I spoke to my IBCLC. She's actually the one that suggested my OB because I told her, you know, this is what I want. I had done a lot of research and found that progesterone, heavy progesterone supplementation during pregnancy leads to tissue growth. So moms with, I was officially diagnosed with IGT, insufficient glandular tissue. And so moms with that tend to see good results from progesterone supplementation through pregnancy. So my IBCLC was like, you need to go to this doctor. She's a NAPRO provider. So Catholic based, which I'm not Catholic, but at that point, really all I cared about was getting a VBAC and having a better breastfeeding journey. So she told me like, you need to go there. So I interviewed her and I did interview one other doctor, but the other doctor didn't know a whole lot about progesterone supplementation. And this one was just like, yes. And she, it was so funny because when I interviewed her, she told me, like asked me, you know, what I went through before and was appalled at everything that had happened and apologized for, you know, what
someone
I had dealt
with. Someone else's doings.
She was like, I want you to know that that would have never happened. Like if you were in my care, we do not just go to C-sections. You know, we are very supportive of VBACs, and which makes sense because, like I said, you know, they're Catholic doctors, so they want to have as many babies as possible. And so she was great, like from the get-go, and I really, really liked her. I ended up going with her, and we did. I found out, we tested my progesterone. It was low from, I found out I was pregnant with my daughter at 9 days post-ovulation, so very quickly. And my progesterone was already low. I was on super heavy progesterone supplementation almost my entire pregnancy. And it did work. I had breast growth, which I didn't with my first, so it worked out well. But in prep for my VBAC, I was doing Webster certified Cairo, but I have done that. I did that with my first too, because it was the only way I could walk by the end of my pregnancy. I was just dying with sciatica pain. Mm-hmm. So I did that. And then I did pelvic floor therapy from like 20 weeks on. And then I did Krisha Crosley's Train for Birth because she's based in Arlington. So I actually went to her in-person class.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it was super fun. My husband went with me and was like, wow, I learned a lot. Like I feel, you know, empowered. I, of course, hired a doula who has had her own VBACs and her own home birth after cesarean with big babies. So we aligned pretty closely there. And she's also very like kind of holistically minded as well. And then I was super on top of staying exercising the whole time. I only gained 30 pounds with this baby. And I also sought out like birth trauma therapy because I kept hitting a wall when I would like envision my birth. I kept hitting a wall. Anytime we got to the hospital, I couldn't visualize further than that. So my birth plan was like, I want to labor at home for as long as I possibly can. Like I want an unmedicated birth. I don't want like lots of people around. I want it to be dark. You know, I want my doula there and my husband there. And that's basically it. All of those birth plans went out the window, which was hard and very like emotional for me at that time. But so I woke up 2 days before my daughter was born. So my daughter was born on January 8th. On January 6th at like 9 a.m., I woke up and I just felt weird. But I mean, I'm like 38 weeks pregnant, almost 39 weeks pregnant. I was like, thought I was just getting close to labor. You know, I felt like I couldn't take a deep breath. Like she wasn't moving very much. I just felt very anxious, very like shaky. But I just thought I felt weird, didn't know what was going on, thought I just need to eat some food and I'd be fine. Went to lunch with my friend, texted my doula and was like, "Hey, this is what's going on. You know, she's not moving very much." She gave me a few things to try at home and told her to keep her updated. And then I called my OB. And at this point, like, blood pressure hadn't even crossed my mind. We hadn't had any issues. This was a Saturday, and the Thursday before, I had my 37-week appointment because we were running almost a full week behind because of holidays and stuff. And I had my 37-week appointment, and barely, I mean, it was like 138 over 87. And she was like, "Let's just keep an eye on it, you know, come back, we'll redo it, not high again." So I, at this point, hadn't even thought to take my blood pressure. So I called my OB. My OB told me to take my blood pressure. I take my blood pressure and it was high. I mean, it was like 150 over 90. But I thought, again, it's an at-home machine. They tend to read weird. I thought, you know, we're fine. So she told me, she was like, "Well, if you want to go get monitored, it doesn't help. It doesn't hurt anything to go get monitored. Just, you know, go to the OB emergency department, just have them hook you up, see what's going on. And then if, you know, if it's nothing, it's nothing. And we'll go from there." So I went back and forth. I actually made my husband make the decision because I could not decide. Because with my first baby as well, we ended up going multiple times for borderline blood pressure and just being like kind of made fun of. And I will say I delivered at a completely different hospital this time. But that was still stuck in my head where like I went, they hooked me up. They're like, "What's wrong with you? She's fine. She's moving. Your blood pressure's fine. I go home." And my husband finally was like, "Just go. Like, it doesn't hurt anything. Just go." So we went, we got there at about 6 o'clock in the evening. And they had me, you know, do a urine sample to see, and there'd been no protein in my urine or anything. They hooked me up to a blood pressure monitor. And of course, I'm like really nervous. So when the first blood pressure came back high, like 165 over 95, and I tried to write it off as like, "Well, I'm just anxious," right? Because you hear about it all the time, like have them redo it, wait 30 minutes, you know.
Hydrate
So
a little and
yeah.
then do it again.
So I did all those things. They came back, did it again 30 minutes later, and it was 170 over 120. And they were great and they were willing to wait. So we waited about 15 minutes. They did it again. We were still 170 over 120 and they started pushing IV meds. And at that point, they had the hospitalist come in and check me. I was 1 centimeter thick, baby posterior, baby was at -4, you know, not favorable at
Not
all.
ready.
And I had already, that was actually my very first check. I had not been checked prior to that. And she, you know, kind of just rode into everything, was like, "Okay, we're doing an induction." And I was like, "Let's slow down. Let's hold on. Because I have not like wrapped my mind around this yet." And I actually asked if I could leave AMA because I've never dealt with high blood pressure. I didn't know how bad this was, how serious it was. And she was so kind. She kind of laughed at me and was like, "No,
No.
no, you're not going anywhere. You're having a baby." And I was like, "Okay." So I'm furiously texting my doula, like, "I'm freaking out. Help me. Like, I'm having a panic attack. This is not what I planned, you know." And she was like, "Just take a deep breath. Like, let them get you settled, get you over, and I'll come up there. We can talk. I'll chill you out, you know, and then I'll leave and come back, you know, anytime you need me." So they started magnesium.
Oh,
They
yeah,
did
because
the, yeah, it took, well, it took 2 IV meds. The first 2 IV meds didn't work, didn't touch my blood pressure. The third did, and it brought it down, but it was still decently high. So they did the loading doses and they warned me, like, "You're going to feel horrible." And I did. The loading doses were terrible. But then once I was on just the slow drip, I didn't feel bad. I felt
oh,
okay.
good.
And
Good.
my doula even laughed and was like, "You're the most okay person I've ever seen ever."
On mag.
Yeah. And so that was fun. That actually ended up being a thing throughout the birth. But they finally did all that. I was moved over to a labor room at like 7:30 p.m. And my doctor, so my OB practice, it's 2 OBs and 1 nurse midwife. And they work as a team. You see all three of them throughout your pregnancy. You see all three of them throughout your birth. And I really did like that. It was nice because it was like, no matter who's on call, I know what I'm getting.
Right.
And there was obviously one doctor that I definitely preferred. And there was one that I had, you know, kind of butted heads a little bit with and throughout my pregnancy. So I was really hopeful that the one that I liked would be there. And she was there when I got admitted. And she came in and we talked, you know, it actually made it into my notes many times, 3 different times that I said, "I only want a C-section in the case of a true emergency, like life or death. Please do not do anything else." And it's in my, I got my hospital notes and it is in my notes 3 times that I said that. So she came in, she put the Foley in, and she told me I wasn't going to be allowed out of bed, which so immediately I'm like getting flashbacks to my previous birth. And I'm trying really hard to like stay positive. And I did talk them into, once I was on that steady state of like steady drip and I was okay and like with it, I talked them into letting me at least have like a bedside commode instead of making me go in the bedpan. So
Yeah.
I at least got that. And so they did the Foley. And she told me, you know, we'll come take it out at 7:30 tomorrow morning. We'll see where you're at. She wanted to do Pitocin while I had the Foley in. Of course, my immediate response is like, no, to Pitt because it just, I had so much pain.
Triggered you probably
Yeah.
too.
So she told me she was like, well, I need you to have contractions for the Foley to like do anything. So let's do a slow, low, you know, she was like, I'll keep it at 6. So we went up by 2 every hour and then it stayed at 6 until the next morning when the Foley came
Nice.
out. And so Foley came out at 7:30 in the morning and I was 2.5 centimeters dilated, 80% of face. Baby was still really high at -3. So we just kind of did Pitt. We moved up slowly, got Pitt up to 20, which so I learned though, having Pitt up to 20, because I was fine. I just felt like I was having like, you know, period cramps. And that was crazy to me because I was dying with Pitt at 10 with my other, you know, my first baby, but my water was broken. And that didn't like click with me until my water broke. So Pitt was at 20 all day and we were fine. At 7 p.m., the nurse shift change happened and my nurses were great. At 7 p.m., we did get one that kind of like overstepped her boundaries a little bit. And my doula was there, thank God, because she walked in and was like terrifying me. But then again, you know, I think I look like a problem patient on paper, right? Like I'm refusing this, I'm refusing this, I'm asking for this, you know. And so I understand she walked in kind of combative and was like, it's been 24 hours, your water's not broken, you're not really progressing, like you need to break your water or you're not going to progress, all this stuff, you know. And she was just like, it's not good for the baby to have Pitt and Mag like that for so long and da 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 da. And I just kind of tried to let it go in one ear and out the other. My doula did the same thing. And when that nurse left, she was like, take a deep breath. It's okay. You're fine. The baby's fine. We've had no issues, no heart decels, nothing. You're okay. If you don't want to break your water, don't break your
Don't do
water.
it. Yeah.
So at like 11, my doctor came in and said, you know, do you want to break your water? I can do that if that's something you want to do. And I said no. So we're at 24 hours at this point, right? So 11 p.m. that day. So right around 24 hours, she comes in. She's like, no, you know, if you don't want to break your water, then we don't break your water. That's fine. And because I even brought up, you know, I said, she's still at -3. Like, I don't want to risk cord prolapse because I know that that can happen with a high baby and breaking water. And I know that that actually legit warrants a C-section. And she looked at me like I had three heads when I was like, I don't want that. Because I don't think she really expected me to bring up, you know, cord prolapse. And this was the doctor that I had butted heads with multiple times. So I was really nervous when she was the one coming in to talk to me about this. I really did think she was going to push me to break my water. And she did even say, like, listen, like early labor takes days. Any progress is progress. Early labor in a C-section or I mean, in an induction or not in an induction, it's the same. We give it time. You're still making progress. You're still effacing. Like, you're still moving forward. We're going to leave it alone if you want to leave it alone. And that was like a game changer for me to hear that from her, especially. I was like, okay, I can do this because at that point, I had been so defensive with anyone who came in the room that wasn't like my husband or doula because all I could think was like, they're going to push me into a C-section. So hearing that kind of like calmed my nerves a little bit. And so I slept all night with a peanut ball, just laying on my side, switching sides anytime, you know, my hips started to hurt because those beds are so uncomfortable. And you know, I still hadn't had any kind of pain medicine at this point. I was still just kind of working through it with my labor comb and doing whatever movements I could do. I was walking slowly every time I got up to go to the bedside commode because it was my only like 2 minutes out of bed. So at 4:30, a nurse came in to like talk to me and check me, and my daughter moved and my water broke. And I was like, okay, because I had told my doctor it's gonna break on its own. Like, let's just leave it alone. So she moved, it broke, and the nurse was right there. And she asked me, you know, how I was doing. I was like, well, my water just broke. And she was like, oh, okay. So, you know, we changed everything out. And I asked her to turn Pitt down because it had been at 20 at this point
Good
for like
for
almost 20
you.
hours. So I was like, let's turn it down to 10. Let's see how I handle it, please. Because I know we're fighting the magnesium. So I knew I needed to keep Pitt on at least a little bit. So we turned it down and we slowly moved it back up. And by 7 a.m., I was literally counting down the minutes until my OB got there because I couldn't relax through. And at 4:30, when my water broke, we did text my doula because I knew things were going to get intense really fast. So she was there. She got there at about, I think she got there at 6:30. And, you know, we're like, I'm on all fours with her doing hip squeezes. I'm using the labor comb. I'm trying to like do any rocking or moving I can. But I could not relax through them. You know, like my whole body was tensing up. And she actually said, you know, I think you should consider an epidural because if you can't relax, you're not going to progress. And you need the PIP because the magnesium's keeping you from like effectively contracting really well. Like you're not relaxing at 14, and we need to get you up to at least 20 if you want a VBAC. And so slowly, the only thing that started mattering to me was VBAC. So and at 7, I was like, oh my God, like if I'm at 5 centimeters, I'll get it. That's what I told my doula. If I'm at 5 centimeters, I'll do it. Because I had only at this point, I had only been checked twice when they pulled the
Twice.
Foley and when I was admitted. So last I knew, I was 2.5 centimeters. So I said, if I'm at a 5, I'll do it. And they didn't push cervical checks at all, which I did really appreciate. You know, they came in, I think, at like 16 hours one time. We're like, it's been 16 hours since you had a cervical check. Can we do one? And I was like, I really don't want you to. And they said, okay, and left it alone. And so they did. I allowed the check that time because it was my doctor. And so I was 5 centimeters. I was 90% effaced, and baby was at -2. So I was like,
Great.
okay, give me the epidural. So I got the epidural, and then we were super still on top of changing positions. But every time I would change positions, my contractions would space out really far. And be in that, but my doula was like, this is the mag. Like, don't get disheartened. This is the mag. Like, it's just your body doesn't really know what's going on. And we were sitting at 20 on PIT. So I was nervous because I have always heard they won't go over that.
Yeah, I mean they will. They don't like to. They will, but there are a lot of things that sometimes have to come into. A lot of times they have to get MFM signature, like the maternal fetal medicine, or they will want to place an IUPC and FSC to get the, okay, this is, sorry, this is a lot of abbreviations, to get the MVUs, the Montevideo units, to make sure it's adequate labor so then they can control the Pitocin.
So they did actually end up placing an internal monitor, and I asked, I was like, that's not the one that goes into her head, right? And
It's the
she said no.
IUPC.
Yeah. So she said it wasn't that. She just wanted to make sure we were getting accurate readings because we were having a really hard time because of the magnesium. So that actually was placed before my water was broken. And I,
Wait, they placed the IUPC before your water was broken?
yeah, it wasn't just an internal monitor, she said. Because and I felt silly asking the question. I'm like, it doesn't screw in her head, right? And she was like, well, your water's not broken. So
So you can't.
and I was like, okay, good. Well, then I'm fine with that.
It's a tube. It's a catheter that goes in between the uterus and the baby, like the baby's head. It's like goes in between when, so when the contractions happen, it presses on the baby and it actually tells them exactly how strong the contraction is.
Yes, and I was trying to use the wireless monitoring, which is why I think she placed it. But I mean, again, I was so I'm tired, you know, at this point, whatever. I didn't care as long as it wasn't, you know, screwed into the baby's head. So they apparently we at that point we had a nurse that was phenomenal. I loved her so much. And we had seen her twice at this point because she was there the afternoon before, not the night nurse that had overstepped her boundaries, but the nurse before that. And she said that she was like, you know, there is a formula that tells them if we can up Pitocin more.
MVUs.
Yeah. She was like, so I'm going to ask them if we can use that. And I'm going to, she was like, I, you know, my daughter was a VBAC. I want to get your VBAC. And I was like, okay.
I love that.
So yeah. So she pushed really hard and we ended up upping PIT to all the way to 28 was as high as
Okay.
we got. And I was, you know, I took a nap. My doula was like, please, for love of God, sleep. Because we're entering close to 48 hours at this point. And I was 36 hours without pain meds. So I didn't sleep a whole lot during that time. And so she told me, you know, go to sleep. Take it. I will wake you up when it's time to move. You know, you'll be fine. So we got all the way up to 28, and about 4:30 p.m., the doctor came in and was like, you know, you haven't had a check since 8:30 this morning. Let's check you. And my doula actually was the one that called the nurse, pointed something out to the nurse on the
Something
monitor.
on your reading probably showing.
Yes. And
Yes,
she was like,
there.
we need to check her. So, you know, they came in, they checked me, and I was 8 centimeters, 100% effaced, and baby was at 0. And I was like, okay. At that point, I was like, okay, we might actually get a VBAC. It'll be okay. And then at 5:30, Again, my doula was like, there's something, she said there was something going on with her heart pattern that made it look like she was really low and she wanted me to get checked again. So I was like, okay. And I trust my doula 100%, like fully 100%. Like, I was so invested in her and everything that she said and she believed. And I knew, I mean, she has had three VBAC babies and had a, situation very similar to me with my first. So I was, trusted her with my life. So I said, okay, I'll go ahead. And I was complete. Baby was at plus one. So they were like, okay, at 5:30, they set me up to do some practice pushes. And they were like, okay, no, you're not, this is not practice, right? And I had epidural. My epidural was, I asked them to keep it low so I could still feel pressure, but I didn't really have anything else to go on. And at that point, again, we're 48 hours in. I was on my back. I didn't care. I didn't care. I was like, I just want to be back. I don't care about anything else. So, and I was very effective on my back. And they ended up putting the squat bar up so I could put my feet on it. And then my doula had the, like,
A Rebozo tug of war or a chi derp. I call it tug of war.
She had me pulling against the like squat bar that I had my feet up on. And they told me really quickly, like, these aren't practice pushes. Like, let's
Just
go.
go
Let's have a
for it.
baby. And so I pushed for less than 20 minutes. My daughter was born. 5:45 was technically like the time we started pushing. I guess it was a little bit over 20, less than 30 minutes. And at 6:11, my daughter was born. And I was like floored that I only pushed for 30 minutes. I was like, okay, well, it can still be another couple hours in my brain. And I did have a grade 3A tear. And they had prepared me like mentally, one, for that, because I have Ehlers-Danlos and all of that. And like it sounds backwards because Ehlers-Danlos makes you more stretchy, but it actually makes you more likely to tear as well.
Bit
So
elasticity in the tissues and good.
So I was kind of prepared for that. And then I did have a hemorrhage, but again, they prepared me for that. They're like, listen, you've been on Pitocin for 48 hours. You've been on magnesium for 48
Magnesium.
hours. Like the likelihood that you are going to bleed more than we want you to bleed is high. So I got as much, delayed cord clamping as I could before my doctor was like, we're done. Okay. So, and I ended up having to, have Cervidil rectally and the Pitocin hanging, all of that. I lost about 1700 milliliters.
Oh,
Yeah.
hey.
But again, at that point, I didn't care.
You
I
were
didn't
so
care.
happy
I was
still.
just like, I
Yeah,
didn't have
you're
a
like,
C-section. My daughter was born 38 weeks and 3 days and 9 pounds and 3 ounces. So I now know I
so
just make big babies.
2 ounces smaller,
2 ounces 2 ounces smaller 2 weeks
smaller than your
earlier.
first baby 2 weeks earlier.
So at this point, I know I just make big babies. And I was doing placental encapsulation as well. So I wanted to see my placenta. I was really interested in it. And when they showed me, there was a velamentous cord and marginal cord that were not caught.
I was gonna say, did they say anything about
Nope,
that?
they were
Well, that's
never
funny
caught.
because BCI sometimes those can actually call for IUGR babies, small babies,
Very,
not larger
very weird.
babies.
So, yeah, it was great. I ended up staying for a while, and because of the magnesium, I had to be on it for 24 hours after, and then she had a little bit of jaundice, kind of so. But it was much better in my healing, light years better. I mean, by 2 weeks, I felt fine. I had a little bit of the granulation tissue that was addressed at my 6 week appointment, but I mean, light years better. I still have problems with my C-section scar, like still. And I have not had any issues since. And it's going well.
Vaginally. You know, it's interesting. A lot of people don't talk about their scars, or they don't, sometimes they don't actually think or relate other issues to their scar. They don't know that sometimes back pain and bladder pain and things like that can be caused by scarring and adhesions.
Well, and I know that I'm prone to adhesions. I actually had adhesions clipped after my C-section. Because I was having a lot of like GI issues that I had experienced before from adhesions from a gallbladder removal. So I had them just go in and look and they found adhesions, they clipped them. And I did, scar massage and mobility and all of that with my C-section scar before as well. So
That's good.
I did all the things.
Yes. And got a baby out in less than 30 minutes. With the first, you were being kind of, I'm going to say, what's the word? Like groomed? Like you were being groomed in a way in the beginning of talking about the big baby and I don't know and like all this stuff to kind of giving you an idea of what may have happened in the future. And that's the crazy thing is I want to tell our listeners, women of strength, if your provider is talking about a big baby, even early in pregnancy or before, just in general, that's a red flag there. That's a red flag there. And then, obviously this provider had her own agenda to meet. She wanted to get off and be done and have had delivered your baby by her 8:30 end of the shift. And, it sucks. I don't think every provider out there is like that, but I do know that they exist. And we are given pressures and having things to the point where, your next provider is like, "What? I am sorry that you were treated that way. I'm sorry that that was done." 'Cause it's like so clearly, like, I mean, so many things that you said, I was like, "Oh gosh," or like rolling my eyes, or like, "Oh," But when we don't know, we don't know. And you're not the only one to that's not knowing, these things. But I encourage everybody to go out there and learn and dive in and know your options and know those red flags leading up. And here you were, you're like, "Okay, I have this crazy thing, like I have to, we're gonna do this." And it took some time and it took a lot of patience and it took support from your providers and your staff. And even when you had a not so excited nurse on your team, the support still was there. And that is truly so important when we're having a VBAC.
That nurse did eventually come around because she was the night nurse on right after my daughter was born. And so she was like, "Oh, wow, like you got your VBAC. I'm surprised you're still here," kind of thing. And she was good. She went through, I ended up like plummeting. My B bleep, my blood pressure pump plummeted, like bottomed out. I freaked my doula out super hardcore because I couldn't keep my eyes open. My face went
And you were
white.
bleeding and your pump was going into shock.
So they she that, and that I mean, it had been about 30 minutes after my daughter was born that that happened, but that freaked everyone out, and she was the nurse that had to push the medicine. So she came around for sure.
Good. I'm so happy. Well, huge
Thank you.
congratulations. I am seriously so glad that you came to share and to show the other women of strength who are coming after you and listening. This is possible. Having a baby with a larger baby is possible. Having a VBAC with an induction, it's possible. Having long labors and still having a VBAC, it's possible. Having preeclampsia and a VBAC, it's possible, right? Like, if there's anything that I can say about this episode is it's possible. VBAC is possible. Know that you can do it. It does take some time, some work, some energy, some true mental power, but it's possible.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Thank you again so
Of
much.
course. Thank you for having me.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.